Public Affairs Subcommittee, and a copy of the Open Meeting Act, Nebraska Revised State Statute 84-1407 through 84-1414, is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. And prior turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the directors will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action, and we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and actions. Thank you. Have a quorum call, please.
Fowler?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
And Chairman?
Here. We have adoption of the agenda?
So move.
Second.
And moved and seconded. And roll call?
Fowler?
Here.
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes, and there's proof of publication of the meeting notice is posted. Let's move on to item number six, amendments to Papio's NRD's 2024 Pay Program Administration Manual. John Winkler, Jane Tate, and Ashley Tamala, HUB International. Welcome.
I'm here with Ashley Tamala from HUB International to present the proposed amendments to the 2024 Papio NRD Pay Administration Manual. Recommendations are supported by HUB Annual Compensation Planning Bulletin and World of Work Salary Budget Survey for the state of Nebraska for 2023 to 2024. Changes include a 2.4% increase to the base pay structure and a cost of living adjustment of 1.3%. Last year, the board approved a 2.5% increase to the pay structure, a 1.5% cost of living adjustment, a 0.5% increase to the merit market matrix, and a one-time inflationary bonus of $1,000 for all full-time employees. District employees have received an average pay increase of 5% this year. Factors impacting employees' pay increase include their annual performance rating and the relationship to the market based on the pay structure. The district's employee reward strategy is designed to compensate performance equitably and comparatively with a major goal to motivate employees to perform their best and to reward excellence. A redline version of the pay administration manual is in your book. And those are our recommendations. And if you have any questions for me and Ashley, we'd be happy to entertain them.
I'll move for staff recommendation.
Second.
And seconded. Okay. Does anybody have any questions for the ladies up front? I have a question. Is this pretty much in line with what you're seeing metro-wise?
It is in line with what we're seeing based on data from World at Work. That is what the recommendations are from, and that does pull in information from organizations in the state. So we do have sufficient data. It is a report that's provided every year, and World at Work has been publishing this report for 50 years now. So the data is pretty stable, pretty consistent, and reliable.
Right.
So yes.
We've seen some decrease in the inflationary aspect of our economy, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense. Okay.
Yep, we're at 3.1% this year, whereas last year we were at 6.5%.
What a bit of difference. Okay. Any other questions? Yes, Director Thompson.
Did HUB do this last year? Is HUB new? Or did the company change?
So we had a change. So our organization, formerly known as Silverstone Group, was acquired by HUB International December of 2019. So we went from being branded as Silverstone Group to co-branded as Silverstone Group HUB. And then just at the start of 2023, we fully transitioned over to HUB International. Same team, same company, different name.
Same high level of service.
There we go.
I was a little worried we dug you out of some small business somewhere.
No.
Are there any other questions from the directors? Is there any questions from the public that would like to address this at all? Everybody's really happy? All right. If there are no other questions, maybe we can have a vote on this issue.
McCormick?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Bonnet?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes.
Boom.
That was easy.
All
Thank you, Ashley. Thanks, Gene.
Number seven, amendments to Papio NRD's 2024 employee handbook. Again, John Winkler and Gene Tate.
Hello again. Okay, so attached for your review and consideration is a redline inline version of the proposed changes to the 2024 employee handbook. The changes that we've made include a work from home policy, which simply clarifies that the district does not have a policy allowing employees to work from home and that no district employees are considered to be remote employees. Resignations add that all leave taken during the last 2 weeks of employment must be approved by the general manager prior to them being taken. A non-disability leave of absence clarifies that this request is for unpaid non-disability leave of absence and that this leave will be without pay or benefits once the employee has exhausted their accrued but unused vacation leave. Travel and expense accounts requires that all reimbursements for travel must be substantiated by attaching driving directions from a mileage tracking software. And the other updates are just calendar year changes from 2023 to 2024. And so the recommendation is that the proposed amendments to the 2024 employee handbook be approved and incorporated into the district's policy manual.
We have a motion for this?
I'll motion. That recommendation.
Second.
Motion and a second. Is there any discussion?
Public comments.
Excuse me?
Yes, public comments.
Any public comments on this first, before we vote? Not much there. Okay. Any directors, do you have any questions? Anything? Yes.
Actually, I have a couple of questions on the drug and policy. Do we have anything in there about vaping?
Vaping?
THC use or vaping use while operating equipment or on the job at all?
The portion of the safety policy in the employee handbook is specifically for like testing. We do have an appendix that's going to be coming to you in the spring, and if it's not in there, we'll make sure that vaping is included.
Okay.
It's just smoking. I don't know if nicotine is included in there or not, but
there's a section on
smoking and
drugs in general. Yeah. But I'd like to see that updated with and vaping to cover the chemicals such as THC that are prevalent in vaping and hallucinogenics, okay. Mushrooms.
Okay. We'll make a note to add that.
Sounds good.
What, I guess I'm curious, what specifically would you add? Like no vaping whatsoever? Or?
I would add no vaping on premises, especially when operating heavy equipment. Yeah. I'm driving NRD district vehicles.
We have a no smoking, no tobacco.
I was going to say.
But you could add it to that section.
Yeah.
Any other question I had was on a tire with recent court cases and legislative action regarding concealed carry and firearms. Are we still a no firearm facility? And why would that be given the legislature's current actions permitting that? Should we reverse that policy, especially for the ability for employees to carry firearms?
No, we would not want any of our employees to carry firearms.
We also have federal agencies located in this building as well.
And in fact, I think there are state statutes that...
Yeah, it's a federal facility, so you can't...
And the third district just reversed D.C.'s prohibition against concealed carry.
I would not advocate for our employees to carry firearms.
Okay. So I'm just wondering if employees are concealed carry permit holders, if they're leaving weapons in the vehicles... Perhaps we should have a locker that they could store their weapons safely while they're working so that they're not leaving them in the vehicle.
I'd say it's a personal responsibility on the employee to determine how they're going to store their firearm. It's not my responsibility if it gets stolen. That's
like our responsibility, though, but their vehicles are on our property. I'm concerned about
We have citizens' vehicles on our property that get broken into and their purses get stolen. And so it's not our responsibility to secure their purse or their personal items. So you're kind of going down a slippery slope if you all of a sudden start storing people's firearms in your facility.
It's a federal property.
Yeah, I know. That's what,
it's not.
So we'd have to coordinate all that with the Corps.
Hasn't the feds struck down the prohibition about banning concealed carry firearms?
You can't carry concealed on federal property, federal buildings.
What do the other federal properties do?
I didn't quite hear the discussion there, but this is federal property, Chapel Hills, from the Corps of Engineers, so if what
we might need to review that.
Say you can't carry it on federal property, so I don't, I assume that one.
I think that ban was recently struck down by a third district.
Weigh in on this?
Try to jump in here. I think the case that you're referring to is striking down an ordinance by the District of Columbia, not related to the federal government's ability to restrict firearms on their property. So I think it's two different issues, but I can look into it whether we're in violation by prohibiting firearms.
I'd like to know if we're in violation either from the legislature or federal.
Okay, we'll do.
Are there any other comments?
Yes.
Yeah, we're noted for not going into red ink situations. I want to commend the staff for using very little red ink for these changes.
You're welcome.
Any other comments? Any other questions, directors? If not, we'll go ahead and roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Burnett?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes, and that concludes my agenda.
11 minutes, you're getting rusty.
Programs, projects, and operations subcommittee meeting December 12th, 2023. Meeting call to order. Item number two, notification Open Meetings Act, posting and announcement of meeting procedure. I think Director Ted Jepp read that. It's still the same effect. Item number three, quorum call.
Here. Jeff?
Here.
Teaser?
Here.
Thompson?
Here.
Chairman?
Hi, here. Item number four, adoption of agenda.
Second.
Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Chairman?
Hi. Item number five, proof of publication of meeting notice. We have that become part of the permanent record. Item number six, bids for Silver Creek Watershed Dam Sites 30 and 33 Improvement Projects. Justin Novak.
Good evening, directors. So the Silver Creek Watershed is one of our special watersheds that was developed in the late 90s, like we do with a lot of our other watersheds throughout the district. It's located basically just northwest of Tecama, kind of along the bluffs there going up towards Decatur. I'm not sure the exact number of structures, but I want to say we built probably close to 20 structures in that watershed, starting, like I said, in the late 90s. During some of our annual reviews of the Nebraska DNR, we've found some deficiencies that need to see immediate repair. So we were working with Olson's to get those designs done. We finally did, and now we sent it out for bid. And we actually received some, I'll say, very favorable bids for where the locations are and some of the trucking that needs to be done. If you want to roll down to the second page, I believe that's the bid tab. Third page, keep going. So there's two pages of bid tabs. We received six bids. The engineer's estimate was $236,715. And our low bid from CDS Enterprise out of Arlington was $144,150, which was significantly lower. We reached out to quite a few contacts as far as references to verify some of the quality of their work. Those came back good. They actually did some work for the city of Papillion through, I think, our Urban Drainage Way program. So really, the references came back good. But if you look at the bid tabulation, a lot of where I think the savings comes in is kind of the mobilization, some of his seating and other things. So the recommendation from Olson and myself is to move forward and award the contract to CDS. So, and then also to note as well, there's two sites for this project. We figured it'd be best to bid them as one, get a better price, since they are about a couple miles away from each other. So we're hopefully to begin the work here after the first of the year and get this done by the end of the fiscal year is kind of the plan. So any questions?
Are we done with all these finally after all these years?
This is actually starting to rebuild the structures that have already been built. So now we're coming full circle.
Thanks, Justin.
Yes, sir.
Put in your memo deficiencies. Can you be specific?
The two biggest deficiencies, and as stated in there, is really the one in Site 30 is the pipe has some rusting issues to where it's actually become perforated, and also the water is starting to run from underneath the pipe. So when you stand at the outlet, the water's coming underneath, which is not a good thing. And then there's also some saturation in the back of the dam, so they want to install some new sand drains at that location. Site 33, if you look, it's a little bit of saturation along the toe of the structure, but the biggest problem is where the pipe comes out into the outlet channel, it's a very steep bank that is sloughed off, and that sloughing is starting to work back towards the toe of the structure, which can create instabilities in the structure and ultimately cause failure.
Are these design issues?
I don't think they're design issues.
They're relatively new.
Yeah, I think they're 20, 25 years old on these structures. You know, they're designed for a 50-year lifespan. I think sometimes sand drains over time, they just lose some of their efficiencies. They may become plugged, you know, things that just happen. I think it could have been, you know, original construction maybe wasn't quite as good on some of it. You can have things just even as rodent issues, you know, around your pipe. They can burrow around there and create issues. So it's really hard to say who puts the blame, if it's design, construction, or just.
Well, my point is, Olson designed these, and they were, I assume, paid for construction period services as well. And now you hired Olson again.
Well,
what's the value of that contract?
So some of these structures were also designed by NRCS too. The value of this contract, I couldn't tell you offhand because it started before. I kind of picked this up towards the end. I want to say it was about $136,000, something like that.
For this change, this particular process?
I believe so. I picked this project up kind of halfway through after the Olsons already started, but I do know a lot of these structures were done by the NRCS, and these may, and I couldn't tell you for sure, may or may not have been designed by them. So.
I've been on board a while. Olson did all of them up there.
Yep.
And if there are design deficiencies, and we hired them again to correct it for 30 and 30,
30 and
33. 33.
Yeah.
What, you know, I would think we'd pick someone else. How did Olson get here to design these and design the specs?
I can't say I disagree with you, Director Thompson. I was not the one that picked the contract.
Well, they're probably selected because they actually did the original design.
Yeah.
So that you don't bring somebody. Well, we don't know. I mean, we're speculating it was a design deficiency. We have no proof that it was a design deficiency. It could have been a construction deficiency, or it could have been, sometimes, as Justin said, it could have been a rodent eating around the pipe.
Yeah, and sometimes.
We haven't proven that it's a design deficiency. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's 25 years old, so it's tough to determine what happened. I mean, if we knew it wasn't, obviously we wouldn't have hired them. But typically, when a firm does a project for us, they are typically the most qualified because they have all the historical knowledge, the designs, everything that went into the original design. Now, if we said, well, this project was deficient or in a design in some way, then we would have some recourse to not use them again or to go after them for the repairs.
Okay.
It'd be hard to prove after 25 years.
So again, the value of this particular transaction from Olson, it wasn't 100 and some thousand, was it?
I can't remember what it is offhand, honestly.
We can find out by Thursday.
Contract.
I mean, I don't recall an RFP.
It may not have been that high.
Yeah.
I think it was less than that, honestly.
But we can find out for Thursday. What
Martin
it
is the one that started this originally. And
who?
I just Martin. He's the one that started this project originally. I just kind of helping him out here to the end, so.
Martin's
out here today.
We'll find out. We can find out.
But I can say, you know, like with pipe failure, you know, you have a pipe that's rusted out. You know, these are polymer-coated pipes. They're supposed to last 50 years. These things rust. They're with cathodic protection. It's hard to say why.
You tell me, ignore 50 years. It comes up all the time.
50 years is a guess. 50 years is the best guess. I mean, if you ask an engineer.
But we're down to 20 or 25, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying we didn't get good bids.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the process here. I don't want to redo someone else's deficiency.
I understand that.
I would agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
And I know, like on Site 33, the sloughing was never even part of the original construction. That was a downstream of where the dam was built. And now that that it's a really, really steep bank that has left. So that really wasn't a design deficiency. That was something that's happened just through the course of time, you know, just groundwater.
I can accept
which
that.
Has kind of created the same issues in a lot of these structures, groundwater saturation and stuff.
We can have a motion
on that. Could you provide maybe by Thursday a map of where those exact locations are?
I didn't put it in here, but yeah, I could bring that for you Thursday. It's easy, yeah, that's really easy to do. I can actually show you kind of the whole Silver Creek structure.
Right.
Yep. Yep, no problem.
Can we have a motion on this item?
We're using that term deficiency. That's specific meaning for most of these engineers here, but are you using some sort of inspection guide or code book? Is this an 84 inspection?
This is basically the Nebraska DNR does annual inspections on these structures, and mm-hmm. they're the ones that determine what we do or what we don't do on any of the repairs that are needed. So it isn't something that our staff determines. It's the governing body of dam safety that determines that.
Which is usually the code book supplied by the Army Corps, right?
Well, this one is DNR, so it's different. This is on a state level application. As you know, though, when staff changes and you get a lot of new people in, sometimes your rules become a little more strict and stringent than they may have been before. So we're seeing things that may have not been noted before, honestly.
So DNR identified the deficiencies, told us to fix them, and then once we do, then they will approve those repairs.
Okay.
Can we have a motion on this side?
So moved. Staff recommendation.
Second.
I think directors have all asked questions. Any questions from the public on this item? Not hearing any. Roll call.
Beezer?
Yes.
Thompson?
No.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sheridan?
Aye.
Thank you, directors.
Thank you. Item number 7, Mopac Trail permanent easement to Plain Sand and Gravel. Eric Williams?
Good afternoon, everyone. Let's start with the map. Make sure for the second page. Mopac Trail south from Springfield is on the east side of Highway 50. And in this section, on the left bank of the Platte River, there's some land that has been purchased with the intention of developing a mining operation. Highway 50 is running parallel to the trail, the former railroad corridor. And there's a request from Plain Sand and Gravel to allow an easement for a crossing from Highway 50 onto the new mining operation. This is about the northwest corner of the mining operation, so kind of everything east of the highway over to the tree line is the area that they are proposing for their operation. Staff has worked with the engineer for the for Plain Sand and Gravel to develop an easement that would authorize them to have access across the right-of-way for the trail. And then we would review the designs for the specifics on the trail signage for trail users and vehicular signage for vehicles crossing the trail in that location, in line with kind of the other trail crossing locations that we have along the Mopac Trail from Springfield down, and particularly along Highway 31. There's several crossings, including another mining operation down at, I think, what's called 186th Street, something like that. There's another location where large trucks cross the trail, and so we have signage to make sure that everybody in the area is safe. So this recommendation is to authorize execution of the easement from the Plain Sand and Gravel so that they can cross from the highway into their future proposed mining operation. That's it.
Thanks, Eric. Do we have a motion on the side?
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
Any questions from the public regarding the item? Directors?
Does spilling sand and gravel on the trail, is that contemplated within the definition of damage? I mean, if the trail's not damaged, but it's covered in sand and gravel, it can make for a pretty dangerous condition using the trail.
So this one's a little tricky. This is a chip limestone or gravel surface trail anyway, and so the material they'd be hauling, it's possible they would be hauling something larger, but the trail is made of functionally the same material in this area. It's not a concrete finish trail. So no, we don't think that would be a problem.
Any other questions?
Eric, I trust your expertise, and I assume it'd be concrete easement for the pour concrete.
Uh, I don't have the plans in front of me, but I do think that they have a concrete access because of the edge of Highway 50. So I do think that it'll be a concrete crossing. Let me check this real quick. Yeah, concrete crossing from the highway across the trail to the other side. I can review those plans again and make sure.
Which, yeah, I don't have a problem with. The only thing I hope it's thick enough for the big old truck.
Yeah, and again,
which
that is.
You'll check into that.
Yep, and that's what we did on Highway 31. The same deal when we built that section of MOPAC was the field accesses were all concrete from the edge of the highway down across the width of the trail and then down into the other property.
Right.
So I could take another look, and I should be able to answer that by Thursday. And they've been very amenable to requests. So if the, I think the surface type here is probably dictated by what NDOT will allow connecting to the edge of the highway. That's probably the strictest standard, and they're pretty careful about what they allow right up to the edge of the highway anyway. I'll check into it, though.
Somewhat related, out of curiosity, is this anywhere near where the big lake might be built further up?
Nope. This is kind of where the plat is curving back around to the north and to the northeast. Okay. So Highway 50 bridge toward Louisville. Big Lake is wherever the other side, several miles away.
Big Dream Lake.
That's not a part of this proposal.
Thanks.
Is that the right answer, John?
Yeah, that's right.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Thompson?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye. Item number 8, Papillion Creek Watershed Agreement with Natural Resources Conservation Service. Ma'am?
Good afternoon. The original work plan for the Papillion Creek Watershed for Grade Stabilization was in 1967. I have a copy here. In that, it said that we were going to build, well, it wasn't even we, the NRD wasn't a we yet, but 52 grade stabilization structures installed over an 8-year period. So that didn't happen, that timeline. But to date, there are 28 structures that were built and we maintain out of that plan. And the way that this plan gets amended is through agreements. So that's what's for your consideration tonight. It's agreement number 9. So it would be the 9th agreement or amendment to this work plan. Over the years, we've taken away some sites that maybe had development and they weren't feasible anymore, or we've rehabbed some sites. But this last agreement is the result of an effort that we started in 2018 to really finish this plan. There's 7 viable remaining sites out of all the identified original sites. So we did, we were able to receive 100% federal funding to do this plan process. We looked at the alternatives for each of these sites, we looked at the purpose for the sites, and we held a number of public open houses to get the concepts out in front of people. And then the next step was we did an environmental assessment for all of these sites. So that work's been completed, and a FONSI, or no significant impact, was identified for these sites. And we can maybe go to the map, Bill. It should be next. So you can see where they're at. There's 3 in Douglas County, 3 in Sarpy, and 1 in Washington County. So this agreement is necessary for the district to sign in order to get federal funding to now construct these that we have done all the planning for. So they are largely grade stabilization structures, with the exception of WP1, which is a flood control structure that you've heard before, and there's a stream stabilization in one of the Sarpy structures. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Once this agreement is signed, it goes with the plan and packaged up, and it gets posted for a 30-day public notice. Assuming that all goes well, then we're able to ask for federal funding to build these.
Thank you. We can have a motion on this item.
Second.
We got a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
I have several questions.
Go ahead.
What would be our expense in this? Do you have any idea?
So the PO, the PO 566, I want to say it's a 60-40 split. It's something like that. So the planning was all 100% federal funding, but the actual construction, the way it works is they pay part, I think it works out to be about 60-40. The district's in charge of land rights. The NRCS can pay for design and construction.
NRCS?
NRCS, yeah.
So what is the NRD responsibility then?
Land rights. is definitely our responsibility, and then I believe it's 40% of construction.
And then we would also be responsible for 40% of construction? Is that what you said? And we have no idea how much that's going to be at this point.
We do. We do have some estimates based on the concept. So we looked at a bunch of alternatives, and we did price out these concepts.
Okay.
So we have a total project of $12 million. Let's see, that it's right around 60% that they could fund.
What's the $28 million figure?
Oh, wait, let's see. So they would pay 28 million is the total project. 12, it says PL 566 funds and other funds 15. I thought they were 60 and we were 40, and I can double check those numbers.
Have they always been that way, or has it kind of fluctuated?
It's pretty standard. It's always been that way. There are pieces. The reason it's not, you see, like, straight 60-40s, there's pieces like recreation that they don't pay for. So any of our projects that have some pieces like that in them, then they can't pay for that. They're pretty specific and always have been on what they'll pay for through that program. And I will say on another note, it's not a... I mean, as you know, from 1967, this isn't a have to do them all at once. It is just the ability, this plan is the ability to get the federal funding to build them if we want to.
Can we still say no at some point or not? Because
that's
committing us to an awful lot of money that
It is committing us to a lot of money. And we've always said, and we've said this throughout the whole open house, we've had two to the landowners. These are beneficial to the landowners. The grade control is in the channel. It's not really that intrusive to the land that they use, and it helps protect their land from erosion. So this is definitely a voluntary type of program, and we've said that all along. It's not something we would want to pursue.
You're not springing some big surprise on these people saying, here we are.
No, and they've all been invited and participated in the open houses.
One other thing. Could you get me the landowners who would be involved in Washington County and around Bennington?
Yes.
Could you supply that to me? Thank you.
Yep, I know that they signed in. It was just a long time ago when we had those.
Right.
So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Quick question. It's just dying, but what does FONSI stand for? Not the Henry Winkler reference.
It's not. It's finding of no significant impact.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was dying.
Really fun.
I was going to buy an owl. I didn't know.
I don't know. That's what they say.
Any other questions?
It's more Spanish than
Fowler?
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
Thompson?
Yes.
Chairman?
Aye.
I think that completes my report.
We'll call the FEM subcommittee to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the rear of the building and rear of the office.
Building.
Rear somewhere. Here somewhere. Quorum call.
Bradley?
Here.
Conley?
Here.
Henningsen?
Here.
McCormick?
Here.
And Chairman?
Here. Adoption agenda.
So move.
Second.
Roll call.
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
And Chairman?
Yes. And 5, proof of publication of meeting notice. I do have it before me. Moving on, item 6, fiscal year 2023 audit, Kerry Fry and Tim Lenz, Burgum KDV. And I have a question. What's the KDV stand for?
Wow, that's a great question.
Work on that, will you?
Yeah, I'll get that answer to you. Thank you, Kerry. Good afternoon, directors. I'm going to keep my comments pretty brief here, but we can. Do we want to scroll through the report or not? Or?
So, could you pull up the report?
I don't need it, but if you all want me to flip you through it quick. Let's go to PDF page 1. That's our independent auditor's report. So, we did the audit as of your 6/30 fiscal year end. Just to simplify this 70-page document to you, the first two paragraphs is our opinion on these financial statements. So we worked, I have Austin Thielen here with me, who worked with Carrie Fry and the team here to test all the financials that are presented here, and we came to the conclusion that they're presented materially correct in accordance with standards, so that's what you want to hear. Just to kind of give you the lay of the land of that document, on page 5 starts the management discussion and analysis. So Carrie and the management of the district put that together to kind of give you a narrative of the financials of the fiscal year. So if you wanted to get narrative to the numbers that are included in the financial statements, that's where I would direct you to. Starting on page 14, we get into the government-wide financial statements. That's your full accrual financial statement. So if you're familiar with for-profit accounting, that'll include all your long-term assets, long-term liabilities. But different governments, you have your fund financial statements. So you have your general fund. Those start on page 16. Those are on your current basis financials, so they do not include your long-term assets or liabilities. There are a couple reconciliation pages on page 17 and 19 that would help you reconcile those two statements together to talk about the differences between them. But overall, again, still a clean opinion on those financial statements. Couple other reports in that packet is our report on internal controls over financial reporting. So as part of the audit, we consider your internal controls. We look at them as part of our planning process. Happy to report, again, similar to prior years, we do not have any material weaknesses to report to you over your internal controls. Also, did not note any non-compliance issues. The district complied with their annual budget that they filed with the state and approved through the board here. And then the last report there, it starts on page 71. Due to the district expending more than $750,000 of federal funds, the district's required to have what's known as a single audit. So this year, through our analysis of what's the major program, we ended up testing the Water and Waste Disposal for Rural Communities program. And that report just summarizes that we did not identify any material weaknesses with that. The district complied with the compliance requirements that are applicable to that program. So happy to report that news to you guys. If you want a summary of all the comments I made, you can flip to page 74, which is the schedule of findings and question costs. So if you wanted a brief synopsis of one page of what the audit says, read that page. In addition to the audit report, we issued a letter to those charged with governance, just required communications that we have to have with you all in writing. No injurious issues in that letter. But just required communications to have with you. And then just happy to report that working with Carrie, we did not identify any material adjustments. Carrie does a great job with getting the financials in order, just some small adjustments for reporting purposes on our side. So it's always a pleasure to work with Carrie and the team here. But happy to go through in more detail if you want, or if you have any specific questions, happy to dive into those too.
Can we get a motion on the floor, please?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you.
Way to go, Carrie.
Anybody from the general public wish to comment? Directors?
I'd just like to say it's such a pleasure to work with Carrie and her staff, with all your financial abilities and your staff. You guys are just run such a great ship, and I love working with you, and I appreciate my assistant treasurer. Awesome job, too. So just hats off. Thank you.
Anybody else?
I just want to say the same thing. Every year we get an auditor's report, and it's exemplary. So I commend you, Carrie, and your staff for doing an outstanding job.
I'll be careful. She'll want to raise.
You just proved it.
With that, go ahead.
With your look at our controls, can you speak at all to our public transparency and maybe how we compare to other similar organizations?
Can you explain on that a little bit?
Transparency and disclosure. Did you look at how we disclose our financial data to the public?
Not necessarily that. I mean, the financial reports included in your guys' board packet, it's communicated to you what our report identified was that the information that's given to you all is accurate, because we didn't have any adjustments to what Carrie gave us to audit.
Does that answer your question?
Probably another person I need to speak to about that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yep.
Good job.
Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving on to agenda item 7, Cranford Lake Water Main Extension Project.
We didn't vote on anything.
I'm sorry.
I didn't vote.
Roll call.
I feel embarrassed. Roll call.
Henningsen?
Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Sherman?
Yes. I knew it was going to pass. Item 7, Cranford Lake Water Main Extension Project. Justin?
Okay, thank you, directors, Director Teaser. So, as you know, we've been extensively working on this Cranford Lake project. I just kind of give you a quick update where things are at. Penrow Construction has just done a phenomenal job. They've really kind of moved this project along quicker than all of us would think. They have all of the water main installed for the entire project. It's all passed pressure tests. The about half of it has already passed the back T test. We're not going to do the rest of it till next spring when the rest of the project is functional. But we've got all the water mains installed to Cranford Lake and throughout Cranford Lake. So all of that project is complete and operational. The standpipe is completely built and ready to fill, but we're not quite ready in the fact that the booster pump station is not finished yet, but that will be completed here hopefully in the next couple months. And that will be fully operational. The structure's up, the water mains are in, they let the power's in. We're just waiting on the VFD controls to basically fill the water tower. Once we have that, we can finish the rest of the testing on the system and the project will be completed. So they have done, like I said, a fantastic job. What I'm bringing here tonight is, I'll say essentially a formality of what the federal government requires us to approve. We've already approved the bond resolution here last October, which defined the terms of the loan and everything that you guys have already, like I said, already approved for us. The USDA has been, I'll say, slowly feeding me paperwork little by little, but here is another couple forms that need to be approved individually by the board that essentially is the loan resolution that spells out how much money we'll receive in the loan, and then a grant agreement that states how much money we can receive up into a grant dollar amount. It's the numbers that we have discussed thoroughly time and time again. It's just something that needs to be approved per their policies. When I discussed this with Brent, he thought that the bond resolution would cover this, but the USDA ultimately wanted us to do this individually with you guys. There's nothing that's changed since the bond resolution that has been approved by you. This is simply a formality of the federal process. And hopefully, once this is done, I'm going to start receiving those grant dollars here in the checking account. So this is why we want to hurry up and get this done, because now we've spent so much money on the project, we can start getting some of that money back from the feds. But then once the project is complete, that's when we will close the loan and then receive the final dollars for the project. So.
Okay, we have two separate.
I move to staff recommendation.
Okay, we're going to have two separate recommendations.
Correct.
A is USDA loan resolution form A, and
Tim made the motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion from the general public? Directors?
Do you want to do these together?
No, we have to do them separately.
Okay.
Do them individually.
Hearing none, roll call.
Yes.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Henningsen?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes. Okay, USDA grant agreement form B. Is there a motion?
So moved. Okay. Second.
Thank you. Any discussion from the general public? Directors?
Director Teaser, I just had a couple of little questions. Will this project cash flow when it's going?
Cash flow is, I'll say, operational in the rural water world. But yes, we think that with the money that we've spent in the project, the grant dollars we've received, and the number of customers that we'll pick up from this, obviously Dakota County Rural Water is pretty sustainable in itself. Currently has over 700 customers. We know of about 50 new customers that are going to come online right of way. Obviously, with the use out at Cranford Lake during the summer, we're anticipating a pretty high volume of usage. And then, you know, obviously things are ever changing, but we're going to have some water rate adjustments. That's definitely going to be a thing coming up here in the next couple of months.
So Cranford Lake, do they pay based on how much water they use?
Correct. So that there's a meter that's actually in the top well house. So when all the campers and all the shower houses and everything else are being used out there, that's actually a metered water usage for the county. Yep.
Can this project expand further in the future or not?
Unfortunately, the way the project is built, you know, obviously, you know, we talked about the discussion with the Village of Hubbard and them hooking into the project. We went to many a town hall meetings, but we couldn't afford to upsize the main and the tower without their sign on because of the grant dollars that we were going to lose without them signing on. It was about an additional $600,000. So unfortunately, with the Village of Hubbard, it's forever more.
So what is the max on the system, and how many new hookups could you get on this?
They're estimating that we can take on an additional 100 new hookups, which is a substantial increase to our current customer base. Another big part of this is upgrading aging infrastructure. The existing booster pump station was below ground in a vault pit. The new one's above ground. It's fully, you know, modernized with VFD controls. Okay. Our tower capacity is tripled compared to what it was before. It's really upgrading the weak side of our system up there.
I mean, I got a lot of input from this when this first started, and people were really excited about this.
Yeah.
They were drinking horrible water.
It's bad up there. You know, people are chomping at the bit. You know, like any water project,
it's a great project.
It takes a long time to materialize between the studies, the funding, the construction. And so I know the public's getting pretty excited, you know, that they've seen all the construction take place. And I can't wait till it's operational and we're putting the customers on, because then it's for real.
Right. Thanks, Justin.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Any further comments from the directors, questions? Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conway?
Henningsen? Yes.
McCormick?
Yes.
And Sherman?
Yes.
Thank you again, directors.
That concludes the agenda.